This program is available on these quality radio services: Replay Radio, Breeze Radio, Talk Radio X, Audioboo, Spreaker, Absence Radio, Nonstop Radio, plus the leading tablets, phones and PCs.
From the heart of Europe to the world, Radio Tetris International. Online on Windows 8 PC, tablets and Windows phones. R-T-I.
From the heart of Europe to the world, this is RTI.
And a very warm welcome to you wherever you are in the world. This is Postcard from Poprad, from the lovely town of Poprad in Slovakia, where it's been snowing this week. I've got to tell you a story about Twitter in a minute. I'm so annoyed with Twitter. But before we do all of that, let's cross over to the, that place over the other side of the North Sea. Just alongside the Loch Deep. That's the... Banks O'Clock, Banksville, where Lee is. Hello.
The Green and Septic Isle.
No.
Yes. Can I just tell everybody, I'm sorry if I'm a bit off thing, this whatever we're doing, because I have to say, I've been setting up the Dead Souls disco. I have a mixing desk, I have an amp, I have... two CD players that plays vinyl as well. I have all sorts of nasty speakers.
Lee, contradiction in terms.
What is?
Well, you said disco.
Disco, it's the Dead Souls disco. And me and my son have set up the Dead Souls disco.
And if you're
going on the road.
If you're doing a disco with Dobby, what's his name, that is not disco.
No, I'm doing disco.
This is disco. Doom, 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 doom. Not twang, 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 twang.
It's going to be a mixture. It's going to have Lonnie Donegan.
Drab.
Lonnie Donegan's not drab, you big philistine. It's going to have Lonnie Donegan.
Drab.
Daniel O'Donnell.
Drab.
Yeah, he should be run over, man. He's not really going to appear in the Dead Souls disco.
Yeah, right.
But that's it. Yeah, it's for people of advanced years who have still got the guts to get out there and do a bit of, like, throwing shapes and stuff like that. And that's what we're doing.
Yeah, that's still a contradiction in terms.
What, throwing shapes?
No, having a disco.
Disco?
Energy music, upbeats.
How do you know I'm not going to do any? My son used
you
to play Man U Mission.
You can't. You can't.
He used to do Man U Mission.
Yeah, but that's when he's on the decks, not when you're on the decks.
No, I'm going to stand in the corner doing Bez dances.
Well, that's probably a good thing. Then we get some decent music.
Then I'll have a bit of a mix.
Very poorly little girl now.
Oh, no, I know.
In Melbourne. She's got
my little
blues.
Rachel.
Hello.
Speaking of Dead Souls, I'm a bit under the weather, but I gotta say, if I had a hat on, I'd take it off to me, because you know it's quite late here, and I still got up out of my sick bed to come and talk to you.
I'd well, take everything off to you,
as
Rachel.
As I put on Twitter, it's silly o'clock, and what did Twitter do with this? I says. And I thought, I'll be nice. I'll tell the Australian people that Rachel's going to be there, European people that Eric's going to be here, and the UK people that Lee's going to be there. I thought that was fair. So I did all three on Twitter. And, you know, I posted. It was me. I done it. I posted it on Twitter. And Rachel lives there. Rachel is a resident of Melbourne. But which one... did Reddit Melbourne pick up Lee?
Talent will out.
Ooh.
The trick is to use our Twitter handles when you're posting.
I think I'm going to in the future, Rachel. I really do. I believe I'm going to do that in the future.
I just use my love handles.
Yes. Okay. There's no answer to that. There is no answer to that whatsoever.
No.
Boys and girls, we're going to just... calm down a little bit for a minute and talk about a lovely guy from Australia who's sadly gone from us now, a gentleman called Philip Hughes. And before Rachel talks, let me just share one thing with you. And I suppose it's a bit ghoulish, really, to share this story now, but it is a fact that many years ago, when I was a young wee lad, I used my other passion, as everybody knows, is motorsport. Could never do the really expensive stuff because wasn't that good at it, actually. But, you know, I liked to do what I was doing. And we were sitting on the dummy grid one day in the UK, and the ambulance was called, and a car was towed away, and a bloke was put in an ambulance. My mum was a little bit worried, bless her, in those days, and she came running over. She said, "You all right, dear?" I said, "Well, you know, worst thing that could have happened, Mum, he's broke his neck." And she kind of looked at me as if to say, "What?" But when you're in the zone, ready, you do what you're doing as a sportsman. And I'm sure Philip Hughes would not wish us to be drab or to be downbeat about the sport or anything like that, because his passion, as we all know, was as a Test cricketer. And, you know, loved the fact that he got his first green baggie and, you know, was very proud of it. And I guess it hasn't been that downbeat, has it, Rach?
It's been difficult. It's just amazing how it's eclipsed everything here in Australia and particularly in, you know, states like Victoria, where I am, New South Wales, where he sadly passed. And these are the real, you know, historical homes of cricket. We've got the MCG not, you know, 4 kilometres away from where I live. All the flags are flying at half mast over all those grounds as well. But the tragic thing was that this accident, and that's all it was.
Yeah, very freak
accident. He was hit in the vertebral artery, which is right down the back of your neck. It basically joins your spinal column to your brain, and he was hit right there. The chances of that happening are really slim. And when the ball hit him, it's akin to being sort of hit by a bullet, but not penetrated, of course. But
it crushed
it's
you,
really
crushed
fast.
The, crushed the artery, didn't it?
Yeah
it crushed the artery. And he was, I mean, the footage, thank goodness there's not much footage of it. But he had his hands on his knees for a second and he was trying to get his wits about him. The guy who bowled it, this 22-year-old guy called Sean Abbott, and he ran down the end of that pitch, and he was just sort of standing there for a second with his hands on his knees like he was sort of getting his bearings, and then he just face-planted on the pitch, and that really was the end of him. It was very distressing for people who were there, and particularly his teammates, of course, because you have to remember he was playing Sheffield Shield, which is, for you guys in the UK, it's county cricket here. He was playing for South Australia, but he's from New South Wales and he's played with New South Wales and that's who he was playing against. So these guys who went to his aid on the field are actually his old teammates, so they all know each other very well. I did have to give him CPR on the field. Thankfully, there was a trauma surgeon from Newcastle actually in the crowd at the time, so he went and offered his assistance. They eventually, the chopper got there, took him to hospital. They had to do surgery, induced coma, which is really normal for a brain injury. But he just never recovered, and that's the thing about it. It's just completely shattering. He's 25 years old. He just got his, you know, he was getting back into form. He was likely to take Michael Clarke's place in the first test next week, which they still don't know if that's going to go ahead or not. I think it's up to the playing group as to whether they want to do that. But four of the guys who were on the field helping him were due to play in that test as well. Sean Abbott must be in bits. It's absolutely not his fault. It was just a freak accident. He was the first one there. He was the one cradling his head on the pitch. He was, you know, this poor guy. I hope it doesn't ruin his career. I hope he manages to pick up a ball again, but it won't be for a while. The thing that has been really sparkling about it, though, there's a test match going on now in Pakistan between Pakistan and New Zealand. They cancelled the day's play yesterday when they found out that he'd passed away, and they went back onto the field today. New Zealand guys in the clubhouse and then coming out onto the field were beside themselves crying. And how can you get your head in the game when, I mean, your body's there, but your head's clearly elsewhere. There's a campaign going on right now called Put Your Bat Out. And everybody around Australia today put, and every household has one, I even have one, a cricket bat at your front door. To, you know, pay respect to this guy. It's just been eclipsing, it really has, because there's 100 cases of this, reported cases of this injury worldwide ever. And one other incident was with a cricket ball. No, I don't think it's just a freak thing that somebody would die from an injury like this. And the fact that it happened on the SCG in the middle of a game is horrendous. But he did, you know, he was doing the one thing that he really loved to do.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you what, Rach, what I also thought was amazing was the Australian skipper Michael Clarke reading out that incredibly emotional statement from Philip Hughes' family. That must have been a tough job as well.
Well, I think it was, and he was also operating on a lot of raw emotion and no sleep. He'd been at the hospital with that family for hours and hours and days, you know, before he had to make that statement. Mm. Something that I found out that was really interesting and actually I thought was really quite good. Phil Hughes' sister Megan took time, a really long time, to sit with Sean Abbott and talk to him and make sure he was all right. But he is undergoing a whole lot of counselling, which he would be. I mean, even though he probably intellectually knows it's not his fault, he would, of course, feel responsible. And he's such a young guy to process that.
You will do. I mean,
it's terrible.
If you've done the sport thing, and I know when things have happened, when I was either rallying or rallycross, you know, if somebody gets hurt, it does play on your mind. But you have to find a way to drive it out. Not saying you don't care. It's just a case of, you know, you have a job to do, and you have to look at it as if it's a job, but probably a job with passion, if you like.
Well, I mean, his job is to, as a fast bowler, his job is to intimidate a batsman. That's what his primary function is. Now, there's been a lot of speculation about what they're going to do.
The idea is he gets the wicket. That's the point.
They play a game of intimidation, and it's purely a psychological game.
Yeah.
It's a psychological game. Nobody intends to maim anybody. But, I mean, you know, the thing that's now coming under question is what is the ICC going to do about safety, and really, no, I think can't. there's two schools of thought. There's two schools of thought with it. You can't get rid of the bouncer. That's never going to happen. You can't stop people bowling a bouncer, and as it is, you can only bowl one and over anyway. The other thing is helmets. Batsmen find that the bigger the helmet and the more coverage it has, the more restricted their movement is. Mm-hmm. So there's a tricky thing there, but also, the thing to remember is that the chances of this happening to somebody else are so slim that it is a consideration, but it shouldn't be a massive one. It's not like he got hit in the temple. It's not like he got hit in the front of the head. Where he got hit, there was a million to one shot of that happening, probably more.
I mean, it's going to be to tie it into Australia, it's going to be the chances of you getting hit by one of those sort of golf ball-sized... I've forgotten the word now. Whatchamacallit, when it was raining heavily and freezing in
hailstone.
Thank you, hailstone. You know, it's like getting hit on the nose by a hailstone. It is so impossible to predict.
Yeah, but it isn't very impossible to predict. I know it's a freak accident, but we have to accept. We're just you know, the Loughborough and Cardiff University have come out with some figures where actually 6% of cricket injuries result exactly because of this, because of what happened here. So it's not a completely unheard of thing.
No, Lee. It's the same as the footballer that was playing at Tottenham, and had that unbelievable problem, you know, where he nearly lost his life. It's like turning around to footballers and saying you can't run. And I think there's got to be a happy medium here. And, you know, thinking out loud for a second, you know, look at the weight of Kevlar and products like that which are very pliable. There's probably somebody going to come up with a product like that.
Well, they have. That's what I was going to say.
In the same way as Michael Schumacher develop those add-ons for Formula One drivers after the loss of Ayrton Senna. You know, it took one thing to bring to another. But they didn't hold on a minute, we're only going to make them do 30 kilometres an hour now. They said, OK, we'll find a happy medium. And I really do hope that the cricket boards around the world find a happy medium rather than being a knee-jerk reaction.
But well, they have found a happy medium. That's what I'm trying to say. And you know, we're ignoring it. The fact is that the England and Wales Cricket Board have made it a requirement, made it last year only, a requirement that all schools who have cricket teams now wear extended helmets. Mm-hmm. And these have been designed so that they don't interfere with your movements and your dexterity and your vision.
This is schools, though, Lee, yeah?
Yeah, well, yeah, but it's a starting point where you can then move it on into something else. Once you've got the safety factor there, you can use it. You can use the safety factor.
It's a cultural shift. I mean, when you think about it, helmets weren't really in use in the professional game until the 70s.
No.
So, you know, it's a cultural shift that has to occur.
But don't forget, if you see 50 years ago.
Yeah, it's true.
If you see a, excuse me, that's rude. That's hostile and rude. And, you know, I was born then and I'm certainly not 50. And that's just hurtful.
I was born before that and I'm still not 40.
Yeah, right.
The Premier of New South Wales offered a state funeral to the family. I don't know what they've decided to do about that. Clearly, they haven't had time to process their own stuff, but there is going to be a state memorial service at the SCG, which is all a bit bleak and dark. All the Sheffield Shield matches have now been cancelled until who knows when. Don't know what's going to happen with this test next week. They've got a few days to figure it out.
We're all ignoring. We're talking nicely about what's gone on, and it's quite right. It's, you know, this was a tragedy and everything else. But we're still not addressing the point that the safety equipment that could have avoided this accident is actually available. It's nice to go on and say that everything, you know, is terrible, like, awful, and all the night. If the safety equipment is there.
If he wanted to wear it, he could have done. But I agree with Rach on this thing. It will have to be something that the cricket boards look at, see what the options are, give the options to the players, and then the players decide. With youngsters... With the youngsters... Yeah, I get it. You know...
But that isn't right. It just isn't right. If we're going to talk about a story as important, as dramatic as this, we at least need to be... to give all sides of it. There's a sports firm. No, we're not. We're ignoring the fact. We're doing the platitudes and ignoring the fact that this equipment is there. And if people are going to suffer like this, is a firm called...
No, I'm not plugging.
And they actually manufacture the stuff. And what they're saying is exactly what Rachel said and what you've said, that even though they have manufactured the stuff that would protect people in these circumstances, there has to be a sea change in the views of the players. And they're saying that is where the problem lies. But the material that we need and the equipment we need to avoid this ever happening again, and it's 6% of these incidents, 6% of all the incidents that happen in cricket. That isn't a small thing. Think about drinking and driving. 10% of all accidents caused by
the materials there to protect these players. I agree with that, but it's got to be the decision of the players and the governing board, not a company who's advertising their wares. I'm not saying that they're advertising their wares right now.
But I do
agree with the youngsters, as happens in boxing, for example. With amateur boxing, you wear headgear, everybody understands it, and that's fine. With the professional people, they choose not to. It's their call.
Well, the University of Sydney have said the same, that the helmets could be changed very simply with a foam skull cap, which would form a cover to the back of the neck. Yeah. The players in all walks of life in this strange society, we have things imposed on us. And if this is going to be a safety factor, I do not believe that actually the final decision has to lie with the players. I think it lies with the governing bodies of cricket to say avoid this happening.
It's got to be the governing bodies and...
You said it had to be the players.
Well, they are combined as one, Lee.
Well, yeah, of course they are. But there is a way of avoiding this happening again. And it is a very, very sad, very dramatic thing. It's affected the world. Even I, as a person who has no real interest in sport, was moved by what happened.
Yes.
And it's a terrible thing. Like Rachel said, the story of the fact that there is no blame. There is no blame on the player. And the sister comforted the bloke who'd done the bouncer, and everything, so there was no blame. But there may well be an area to look into where this could be avoided, and everybody who's intelligent, like the University of Sydney, the Loughborough University, this company, and other people are all saying the same thing, that we can avoid this happening. Let's avoid it.
But we don't decide that. We have to allow the governing body, which is combined with the players, to make that decision. We can't foist that upon anybody.
Well, let us campaign for it then.
Why? It's up to those. The campaign will come from within the cricket community. That's the key factor, the cricket community. And if they see a merit, I disagree. I think in the same way as lots of other parts of the game have changed over the years, whereby at one point, if you bumped into a cricket stump, the way it was made in the old days, it could do you serious damage. It doesn't apply the same way now. Helmets, as Rachel said, even though it was a few years ago, helmets have come in. Over the years, they've actually been developed, changed, the front head guard was put on, and you could see them evolve over time. And maybe this will be an evolution of the helmet further. But right now, I don't think it's the topic for conversation. What I do think is, what Rachel's trying to say, I think, is that we have to share the fact that, you know, we understand that this guy was doing an amazing job. He was doing his passion. We have great sympathies for his family. But equally, we have the same sympathy for Sean Abbott, who delivered the ball on the Tuesday afternoon in question. So I think the key factor now is to let the thing go through, respect everybody's wishes, and then look at, in the cold, hard light of day, you then see which is the best way to go. Otherwise, you'll end up with a knee-jerk reaction. And that could be as equally as bad as it can be good.
Yeah, but it's not a knee-jerk reaction, is it? No, people who are not entirely involved in this, like me, can look at it dispassionately at this stage and say, well, look, all these people, and that's all we're saying, is that all these people have been recommending a different kind of helmet for X number of years, for 2 years, I think it is, and that the availability is there, and I do not see that we can say it's down to the players to make a decision. It isn't. It's the governing body that should make a decision on this.
Well, the governing body is partly the players as well, Lee. So because most of the governing bodies are ex-players anyway, as is the case with Formula One, where you've got people like Damon Hill in the UK control centre of motorsport. And you've got the same in other parts of the world as well. And I'm sure Rachel could give me a long list of people that are in Australian rules football who used to be players and are now part of governing bodies and other sports as well. So I think we have to let them go through with it and let them go through their process so as it's done properly, equally around the world. It's all done as a joined up thing, not a separatist thing. Because the joined up bit will be the better cure, not the singular cure. And I think that's probably where you were coming from, Rach, isn't it?
Yeah. If it takes a cricketer to drop dead on a cricket pitch, essentially, then, you know, maybe that'll speed up that conversation and, you know, that call to action. And I mean,
I agree.
I think it's I think it's important that conversation's had, but I don't think it's important to have it the day after the guys die.
Exactly.
I think, you know, maybe have it next week. And maybe wait, because they don't even know what they're going to do about the test next week. So when somebody probably somewhere in a boardroom somewhere is having discussions about this very thing already. Mm. And we don't know what's happening behind closed doors at this point. Nope. So there's little point speculating. I don't even know what door I've gone through myself.
Ladies and gentlemen, we will summarise and wish that our sincere sympathies to Philip Hughes' family, and equally Absolutely. That of Sean Abbott and his family as well, and the entire cricket community, especially down in the Australasia area, where it's a very close thing, as well as around the world. Very quickly, we move on to a couple of other topics in part one of Postcard from Poprad, where the crime novelist PJ James, who penned more than 20 books and didn't start as a writer until she was in her 40s.
She was 60.
No, she had her first published...
It's not too late for me, then.
No, it's not too late for me.
She was first published... She was first published at the age of 42, and she died at the age of 94, and it was because she, you know, she went into this world which said, you've got to do this stuff because your husband's not well and you've got to stick to your job and you've got to do all these wonderful things. And at 42, she thought, I'm going to write a book. And I tell you what, you've got to take your hat off to the lady that can do that and carry on. And didn't she write some good books?
She did.
I thought she was a man. No, all this time. I thought PJ was a bloke. And some other friend of mine in the UK today posted, all right, hands up who thought PJ was a bloke.
Can I just point out,
we're all calling it a PJ. And it's actually PD.
PD, there you go, sorry.
Okay. Anyway, we wish her well wherever she is.
Yeah.
We haven't got time to waste on Mad Frankie Fraser, who's died at the age of 90. Who cares? But we will spend the last couple of seconds on poor old Arthur Montford, who's died at the age of 85. He was the former Scottish football broadcaster. He was terribly Scottish, and yet you could understand every word he was saying. It was amazing.
That's a terrible thing to say.
He had that beautiful Scottish accent, and yet he delivered it in such a way that even somebody whose second language was English understood every word. He was a pro. Absolutely.
He enunciated properly.
He did.
He was mellifluous.
Just like me.
He was.
He was mellifluous.
Yeah. Yes. He also wrote about lots of other sports as well. But anyway, that was part one of Postcard from Poprad. Don't go away. Have a little cough, Rach. Yes, have a little cough. I'll play a commercial break for you. We'll be back in a couple of seconds, boys and girls, with lots more. And there'll be a bum fight between me and Lee in a minute about that boring stuff called vinyl. as well as many other things. You can have a cup of tea, drink your milkshake. Well, you could even go to the little girl's room if you fancied it, I suppose. This is Postcard from Fat Bread. We'll be back shortly, very shortly, after this very important commercial break.
Hi, I'm Lewis.
Hi, I'm Chris.
Hi, I'm Nick.
Hi, I'm you.
Hi, I'm Ben.
Together, we are all Train to Game winners.
If you want to join us in the Train to Game Hall of Fame
and take your first step in a career into the gaming industry,
please go to www.traintogame.com.
That's www.traintogame.com.
If you want to join us in the Train to Game Hall of Fame,
that address again,
www.traintogame.com.
If your dream holiday is 2 hours from the UK, perfect for children and teenagers, young couples and the older visitor, ideal for the physically active and for those who just want to unwind, Aqua City is the destination for you. Described by the Travel Channel as the place that will soon be on everybody's lips, be ahead of the crowd and the envy of your friends, but still enjoy a home from home. Come to Aqua City Poprad, the world's leading green resort.
From the heart of Europe to the world, Radio Tetris International. Online on Windows 8 PC, tablets and Windows phones.